Israel and the Middle East, The Last 6,000 Years, Part 1, was presented by Earl Craig on January 23, 2011, at Gutenberg College. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2011. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
As Jack mentioned, I originally put together this presentation 4 years ago, right after the two conflicts that took place in Israel or around Israel. The first was the summer of 2006 when Hamas down in the Gaza, the Palestinian organization there, kidnapped Israeli soldier and were holding him hostage. And then Hezbollah up in southern Lebanon kidnapped two Israeli soldiers and were holding them hostage. And the result was quite a bit of conflict. The first conflict that Israel... I'm not sure if they ever really admitted this, but sort of technically lost that conflict in southern Lebanon. But I put together this presentation to help people understand why even those conflicts had taken place, were taking place. And as those of you who have been reading various books in preparation for your trip, as well as maybe coming to hear Dave Crabtree, teach on the history of Jerusalem and Israel, as you know, you really have to go back at least 4,000 years to answer the question, why did those conflicts take place in the summer of 2006? As David has done, I'm going to go back 6,000 years, so this is Israel and the Middle East the last 6,000 years, but as David is not doing, I'm going to accomplish the task in 3 hours that he is accomplishing in 10 weeks. So you're going to get just a ton of information this morning. I haven't done it this particular way where you have the slides as well as I have the slides, and the slides are up on the screen. So I'm glad that some of you do have them so that you can take notes and feel free to interrupt me at any particular time and ask questions, and we can take bunny trails, and hopefully we really will be done within 3 hours. We'll also take a break halfway through because this presentation is in two parts. We're going to go historically from 3800 BC to the birth of Jesus Christ. That's kind of a natural break for those of us who are Christians anyway. And then, so we'll take a break then, and then afterwards we'll go from the birth of Jesus Christ to the present. So this is where David is taking you right down, you know, looking at every pothole and turning over every rock on the road for 6,000 years of history. I'm up at about 30,000 feet or so, and this is very much of the survey. So hopefully the combination of the two will really benefit you as you try to get as much information into your heads as possible. Before you hit the tarmac in Tel Aviv and step off the plane and go, wow, I'm in Israel. What does this mean? Well, it means a ton because of the amount of history that has taken place in that area. And the more information, the more images, the more maps, you'll see a lot of maps. I love maps, and the maps are just a wonderful way to help kind of put the area not only in historical context, but certainly also in geographical context. And so that the more information that you can stuff into your heads between now and March, obviously the better. So this is just one more opportunity for that. So let's get going. First of all, I want to lay the groundwork for this historical survey before we even get into the historical survey itself. Here's a map of Israel and its neighbors today. You can see that Israel, right here, a very small piece of land surrounded by a lot of countries that are mostly Muslim in their religion. as well as Arab in their demographics. So there it is, stuck at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea, with Egypt just south of it, Syria, Lebanon right there, Jordan just east of it, Saudi Arabia down here. This will be the Red Sea, the Gulf of Suez, the Gulf of Aqaba that touches just at the southern tip of Israel where Eilat is. Jerusalem, right about there in the middle of the country. And then Turkey up here, you've got Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal. But these countries are of different color because of their relationship with Israel, which is not altogether friendly a lot of the times because of the Muslim influence and the Arab influence. Just another map to show you. Here is Israel right there. The peanut here is the West Bank, where the Palestinian Authority has its jurisdiction. The Sinai Desert, which Moses crossed with the Israelites, we'll get to that. Egypt again, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon right there. Iraq, Baghdad over here, Iran and Tehran, and we'll get into the relationship that with Israel that they have, and Saudi Arabia down south, Turkey up above. Another map, ancient Near East and modern states. We'll be getting into more of this. This area right here, this kind of it's colored somewhat green, is the so-called, and it even goes on down here into northern Egypt where Cairo is called the Fertile Crescent because there's desert out in this area, Turkey up north. Cyprus also is an island just right there. So three maps for you. One more map, modern-day Israel. So zooming in on it, Jerusalem at the kind of the cusp of this or the indentation of the peanut. You've got the Dead Sea just east of Israel, the Sea of Galilee up north, the Jordan River that flows from the Sea of Galilee down to the Jordan River. Golan Heights, a much disputed area with Syria. I think we'll maybe cover that a little bit later too. Lebanon north, Nazareth. Here, just west of the Sea of Galilee, Capernaum is just at the top of the Sea of Galilee. This city right here is Tiberias, named for the Roman emperor. Gaza Strip, very important area down here, one of the most densely populated areas in the world because of the Palestinians that are all crammed in there, having many of them having left Israel proper during the 1948 and 67 wars. And then Egypt over here to the south. Eilat down at the bottom. This is the Gulf of Aqaba, just south of Israel. Maybe that's enough for that right there. So modern-day Israel. Modern political boundaries, I've kind of already given them to you here. There's the West Bank, Israel, Gaza Strip, etc. Sea of Galilee, you can see maybe a little bit more easily. And the Dead Sea down below with the Jordan River flowing from the Dead Sea, I'm sorry, from the Sea of Galilee down to the Dead Sea. Let me give you some theological framework. This is my theological framework, obviously, but if you have any questions about it, I'd be glad to dive into a little bit. First of all, that the Bible indicates that God is the sovereign ruler of all human history. Number two, that the Bible provides us with an historical account of God and his relationship with especially one group of people, Abraham and his descendants, the Jews. Thirdly, that the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, in the Hebrew Scriptures, has been an important part of this relationship between God and his people, the Jews. And then fourthly, through Jesus of Nazareth as the promised Messiah, God is fulfilling his promises to his people, the Jews, and then including Gentiles who believe in Jesus, and we'll get into that a little bit more when we look at Abraham. So that's just a bit of a theological framework I want to give you. Two important terms regarding the Middle East. Both of these terms you probably have heard before. I've mentioned one already. The first one is the Fertile Crescent. That's the land from Egypt to Iraq, excluding Jordan and northern Saudi Arabia, that is usable for growing food. Because the three great rivers, the Tigris, the Euphrates, and the Nile, that provide water for growing food, as well as the fact that this area receives at least 200 millimeters of rain each year, as opposed to the desert in between the Iraq and Israel, let's call it, that is just absolute desert, receives hardly any rain whatsoever. So Fertile Crescent, just a good term, good phrase to know about the Middle East. Here it is, in fact, on the map. So as I pointed out even earlier on a previous map, Fertile Crescent, you've got the Tigris and Euphrates rivers that you can barely see, probably more easily on if you have them in your booklet there. An easy way to remember the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers, which one is which, T for top. Tigris is on top. It's the more northern of the two rivers. Euphrates on the bottom. And then you've got the Nile River over here in Egypt. So that's the Fertile Crescent. Palestine right there, Israel in that area. Mesopotamia in the Fertile Crescent, so another map to show you here. The Taurus Mountains over to the left that will block some of the storm systems that come down through Turkey from Europe. These are the Zagros Mountains here that border Iran, Persia, and Iraq, Iraq being right there in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, and then Israel over here, Egypt, so the Fertile Crescent in that area. Two important terms, again, going now moving on to the second one, the word Levant. It's the land in the Middle East made up of basically a Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and Israel. So this is the Levant here. Any of you who speak French know why it's called the Levant? Lever in French is to rise. The French named it the Levant because it's the direction in which the sun rises with respect to them in France. So that's the rising of the sun there in the east. That's the Levant. You've got Israel, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, and that are essentially a part of the Fertile Crescent. Modern-day Israel. At the crossroads of Europe, Asia, and Africa, it's the land bridge and was a major trade route in the ancient times between the Mediterranean Sea and the desert of Jordan and Arabia. That is, the route itself was situated between the Mediterranean Sea and the desert of Jordan and of Arabia, so that any goods would travel by that land bridge north from, let's say, Turkey, Syria, even from the east, from Iraq and the Persian area, down into Egypt and the African area, and vice versa, going the other direction. 290 miles long, Israel is. It's 85 miles wide at its widest point, 35 miles wide at its narrowest point, 8,367 square miles. This shows you its size in comparison to Great Britain on the left and the United States on the right. So a pretty small piece of land that attracts a tremendous amount of attention in our day as well as in history past. Compared to sizes of other countries in the Middle East, you've got Egypt that's the size of, well, start at the top, Cyprus, about half of New Jersey, Egypt, Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas, Iran is about the size of Alaska, Iraq, almost California, Israel itself, about New Jersey, Jordan, Indiana, Lebanon, half of Massachusetts, Syria, North Dakota, and Saudi Arabia, over a quarter of the size of the continental U.S. down the southern portion there, and then Turkey about the size of the United States. Compared to populations, Israel has 7 million people, 80% of those are Jews, 20% are Palestinian Arabs. Syria, 19 million people, Lebanon 4, Jordan 6, Iraq 29 million, Iran 70 million people, Egypt 74 million people, just south of Israel, Saudi Arabia 25 million, and Turkey 73 million. Now this was back 2006, I would assume that these numbers have increased in some cases rather significantly. Israel, 7 million people. Surrounding Arab countries, 217 million people, excluding Turkey, 73 million people. So you have to realize that within 400 miles, there are 100 million Arabs living around Israel with its 80% of 7 million Jews. So you can understand why the Israelis are a little bit nervous whenever sabers start to rattle in that area. They are obviously far outnumbered and wouldn't take maybe but just a horde of folks deciding to walk their way and take whatever they got. And it would create some huge problems for them, even perhaps even overrun them. And that's why the United States has chosen to support them and help them in their defense for as long as we have. Some more background information, just FYI, types of governments. Israel has a parliamentary democracy, Syria a presidential republic. The others here, I'll just kind of keep going. One of the ones, Saudi Arabia down here, second to the last, an absolute monarchy using the Islamic law Sharia within the country. I believe Saudi Arabia is the last remaining absolute monarchy in the world. This map shows the different types of government throughout the world. It's not easily seen on this map, but this is very purple in your booklet there. That's Saudi Arabia with its absolute monarchy. So I'll let you, at your leisure, you can go over that some more. Just zooming in on it a little bit, just to show the different kinds of governments that surround Israel, Israel itself, with, what are we calling that, Orange Parliamentary Republic? Is that what I said it was? Okay, good. An important fact to remember about the Middle East, that land, well, any area maybe for that matter, but land has always been an important commodity to man. First, because in the ancient Near East, people believed the land belonged to their gods, so that if an invader sought to take a people's land, the battle took place, as far as the people were concerned, not only on earth between the human combatants, but also in the heavens between their gods. And the result of the battle was because of whose god was more powerful, with the more powerful gods prevailing and determining the outcome of the battle on earth. Secondly, because land is not only the most important tool for survival as the means to grow food and feed livestock, but it also provides an element of permanence and security in order to establish a nation or empire with cities and homes. And obviously this is the fact that we're watching that get played out between the Jews and the Arabs there in the land of Palestine slash Israel, or Israel slash Palestine, depending on how you want to say it. Four important questions to ask. Who has ruled over the land of Israel during the course of history? Who has lived on the land of Israel during the course of history? Because both of those definitely figure into the conflict even now. Then who has the theological right to rule over and live on the land of Israel? That question also figures into the conflict even right now, depending upon where you're thinking in a Christian manner or a Jewish manner or a Muslim manner. Then fourthly, what effect does a nation's or people's past have on their current mentality? I'll mention a little of this as we go on, and especially when we discuss Saddam Hussein near the end of this whole presentation. Yes, go ahead.
Can you tell me, is this the reason that the area around Israel doesn't offer Palestine a homeland? With all that land around, is it because of this?
No, probably not. I think that the reason why the Jordanians and the Egyptians, perhaps even the Lebanese, do not really want to offer a land to Israel is because they themselves are struggling just to support their own populations, indigenous populations. They don't need any more people to have to try to support. And so they have set up refugee camps, especially the Jordanians and Lebanon too. You can consider that southern portion of Lebanon to basically be one big huge refugee camp for the Palestinians. And I'll show you some figures here near the end of the presentation on the numbers there. But I think that's really the reason. They're just, we don't want you because you're different, a little bit different, even though there's the same ethnicity, but just not welcome is the issue, I think.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So on the left there, who has ruled over the land of Israel? Well, if you kind of consider 18 different sections here. Canaanites from 3800 to 1400 BC on the left, who's ruled over the same, who's lived on the land of Israel. I divided it up because you've got the patriarchs of the Jews, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, coming in that second section there between 2000 and 1800 BC. Then the Israelites ruled over the land of Israel, 1400 to 740 BC, and they lived on the land along with the Canaanites because they didn't wipe them all out. You got folks like Joshua, David, Isaiah living during that time, as well as a whole bunch of others. Assyrians ruling over the land of Israel from about 900 to 609, with Israel sort of a kind of a subject of theirs. The Babylonians, 609 to 539. Then you get the Persians, the Greeks, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids, the Hasmoneans, the Maccabeans, and the Romans. And that's as far as you've covered for those of you attending David's class. Then you can see on the right, because of various things that we'll discuss here in a few minutes too, historical events. I've got Israelites mainly who have lived on the land. Then Samaritans who replaced them after the Assyrian captivity and overrunning of the land. From the Romans on the left there, number 12, the Byzantines and Arab Muslims, Crusaders, Mamluk Muslims, Ottoman Muslims, British and Israelis. So a lot of different folks have ruled over the land of Israel. Going back over to the right to number 11 even, starting there, Jews, but sparsely populated after AD 135, after the rebellion of Simon Bar Kokhba, and then Jews and Arabs, Muslims, Christians from that point on, and now Israeli Jews here in modern times. So if you were to ask the question, really, who has the right to live on the land based upon who's ruled over the land and who's lived on the land? Potpourri of answers to that question, depending upon how far back you want to go in history. What I'm going to do with this presentation is take you through 10 divisions of history: the pre-patriarchal period, 3800 to 2000, patriarchal period, 2000 to 1800, the Egyptian sojourn, 1800 to 1400, Exodus and settlement of the land, 1400 to 1050. Some of my dates, by the way, might be a little bit different from David's. He's wrong, I'm right. Just want to let you know that. These dates are just so up for grabs. Some of them we know pretty precisely because of archaeological evidence and other even literary evidence that comes from those periods, but some of them are just almost just sheer guess. Within 50, 100, 150 years, you can typically get that accurate. Six, a return to the pre-Roman period, 539 to 60, then the Roman-Byzantine period, 60 BC to AD 630, the Muslim-Christian period, 630 to 1917, British period, 1918 to 1948, and the State of Israel, 1948 to the present. Maybe this is a good time here, too. I also like to divide history up at using not only these categories or these divisions, but also 500-year increments. Let me just kind of offer this to you. This is for free. A little bit extra here for you. It's 2000 BC. You can think of whom? 2000 BC. Abraham, exactly. 1500 BC, you can think of whom? What happened right around 1500 BC? Moses. Moses and the rescue of the Jews from Egypt. Zero, you can think of whom? Jesus. Okay, good. 500 AD. Want to guess there what I would... It's a little bit off, maybe by about 90 years. Well, actually, close. Yeah, he's 630, a little bit ahead, but a little bit before the fall of Rome. 410, Alaric. The Visigoths sacked Rome, 410, but you know that's kind of the general same time. 1000 BC, yes, but AD.
Crusades
start. That's right. The Crusades, as well as the schism, what's called the Great Schism, the split between the Eastern and the Western churches. You get the Roman Catholic Church in the West and the Greek Orthodox and Eastern Orthodox churches in the East. 1054, I think, is what the official date for that. All right, good. And then 1500 AD, approximately what took place about then?
Reformation.
That's right. And one other event that you might just want to keep in mind, particularly as we're thinking about the Middle East and its history, 1453. the sack of the fall of Constantinople, when the Turks attacked it, took it over, and eventually the result of that was the Ottoman Empire, 1453. 2000?
Me.
You, that's right. Us. 1948, if we're talking about kind of Middle Eastern history, the establishment of the State of Israel. All right, good. Moving on. As I go through each of these divisions, we'll see an ever-widening circle of influence on the land of Israel. Starting off with obviously just the kind of the close area, Mesopotamia, Egypt, and Anatolia, and then the immediate neighbors. Then eventually Persia will come into play, then Greece, then Roman Constantinople, the Arabian Peninsula, Asia with the Turks and Mongols, and that will be the 1453, the downfall of Constantinople and the Byzantine Empire. Europe from 1099 because of the Crusades, United Nations 1947, and then America also. So we'll see this ever-widening circle that eventually ends up with folks halfway around the world. That is, you and I are influencing Israel because of America's relationship with Israel. But it goes long way back to others who had that influence too. Just another map for you, ancient Mediterranean world. You've got Italy, Greece, you're going to fly right over them. As you come down into Tel Aviv over Turkey, Cyprus, and then land in Tel Aviv right about there, and just west of Jerusalem, it's on the coast. And so here is Israel / Palestine. So are you flying from Portland to Tel Aviv or
New York?
Okay, to Newark. And then, El Al, maybe? El Al from, no?
No, Continental for us.
Continental? Okay. Cool.
What's the regular flight?
Delta.
Okay. Interesting. All right, good. Mesopotamia and Egypt, three kingdoms or three areas and their kingdoms that to keep in mind. The Hittite kingdom in purple up here in Turkey. This area here, the Mesopotamian area with Assyria and the Assyrian and the Babylonian empires, and then the Egyptian empire down south. With, there it is, the land of Canaan in Israel there. Table of Nations, Genesis 10. We start off with Noah, his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Let's go over here to the right first. Japheth, his descendants are mostly Indo-Europeans. Where does the word Indo come from? The Indus Valley in Pakistan, where the Indus River is. So the band from, do I have that map? Well, kind of, not really. The band, it starts way down over here, really. But the band of land that goes from the Indus Valley in Pakistan up through Iran, Persia, and all this area up here into Europe would be the Indo-European peoples, including, I put down here, the Persians. That's why when you ask somebody from Iran, where are they from, or what background are they, who are they? They will typically say they are Persian. They want to make clear that they are not Arabs. The Iranians are they are Persians. They are Indo-Europeans. They are more like you and me than they are like the Arabs, who are Semites, descendants of Shem here, Semitic peoples. Just drop the S to make Semitic. That'd be Abraham, then Isaac and Ishmael, his two sons, Jews descending from Isaac, and the Arabs descending from Ishmael. Ham, mostly Africans, and that would then include the Egyptians and the Canaanites. This is rough, too. All right, if you go back to Genesis 10, you'll see that, now, well, what about this? You're right. But this is just kind of a rough outline there. So I was saying here, the Hamites here, moving south, the Semitic peoples, Arabs and Jews, in this area here, and then the Indo-European folks up north that eventually migrated our way. So now let's start a historical survey of the Middle East. Part 1, 3800 BC to the birth of Jesus Christ, from the Sumerians to the Romans. First division of history, the pre-patriarchal period, 3800 to 2000. Patriarch comes from the Greek words pater, meaning father, and arche, ruler or leader. So the first fathers, first rulers, leaders of the Jewish faith were Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So this is a pre-patriarchal period. This is before they arrived on the scene. As I mentioned, the general flow of slides within each division of history. First, we'll look at the area of outside influence on Palestine-Israel, and then the second section will be focusing on Palestine-Israel itself. Ever-widening circle of influence, where do we begin? And we'll be here for a while, the Mesopotamian, Egyptian, and Anatolian area with the immediate neighbors. In this pre-patriarchal period, you've got three areas of outside influence, those Mesopotamia, Egypt, and Anatolia. Mesopotamia, its word means land between two rivers. It is modern Iraq. Baghdad is on the Tigris River. That's the top one, the more northern one. Babylon was on the Euphrates River, the more southern one. Eventually, in constant conflict in the ancient world for control of the land of Israel for economic and trade purposes, because Israel is that land bridge between Asia and Africa. Mesopotamia, you've got the Sumerians and the Akkadians. The Sumerians from 3800 to 2350 BC, probably a lot of this is a review for some of you. Southern Mesopotamia, southern Iraq, invented the Sumerians, that's where they lived, the Sumerians. They invented the wheel and plow, invented writing, cuneiform from the Latin cuneus, meaning wedge on clay tablets. They were polytheists and syncretists, so they didn't mind if, you know, kind of borrowing and sharing and incorporating other people's religions into theirs. That's what syncretism means. The Akkadians from 2350 to 2000 BC, they were in central Mesopotamia and central Iraq. They conquered the Sumerians around 2350 BC. They were religiously similar to the Sumerians, so that Abraham himself may have begun his life as a pagan polytheist around 2000 BC. The Egyptians, I want to talk about them all the way from 3200 to 520 BC. 31 dynasties of kings. Have anyone ever tried to read a history of ancient Egypt? It was one of the best bedtime stories I've ever read. I just couldn't hang in there. 31 dynasty during that period of time. The kings were called pharaohs from Per'a'a, meaning great house, and they were considered the gods or the sons of gods. As I'm learning more and more about this whole issue of how kings were considered in the ancient Near East, kind of the sons of their main gods there in the ancient Near East, and therefore ruling with the same authority as their gods. Polytheists, like the others of the ancient Near East, the Egyptians were. They wrote in hieroglyphics, meaning priestly writing. They used pictographs or picture writing. They were eventually in constant conflict with the Mesopotamians. Why? For control of the land of Israel, because it was that land bridge as a trade route. Just FYI, the Great Pyramid of Giza and the Sphinx were built around 2500 BC, so about 500 years before Abraham. Anatolia, modern-day Turkey or Asia Minor. It was there that you would find the Hittite kingdom, descendants of Heth. That's why the Hittites, son of Canaan, son of Ham, son of Noah from Genesis 10. Mentioned also in Genesis 15 as inhabitants of the land of Canaan, so they must have migrated down south to there. So, as I said there, must have migrated north from the... Oh, I'm sorry, must have migrated, sure, north from the land of Canaan to form this empire. Now we'll zero in then on Palestine-Israel during this pre-patriarchal period. It's the biblical land of Canaan, quote-unquote, which is first mentioned in Genesis 11:31, in the midst of God's call to Abraham, inhabited by Canaanites, who are descendants mostly of Ham, son of Noah. We go on to the patriarchal period, 2000 to 1800 BC, just a 200-year time here, that ever-widening influence. We're not getting any wider yet. Mesopotamia, you've got the old Assyrian Empire from 2000 to 1700 BC, old because there will be a new Assyrian Empire coming up, with the capital at Nineveh in northern Iraq, now occupied by the Kurds. There's Egypt with its middle kingdom and Anatolia, the Hittites. Focusing in on Palestine, inhabited mostly by the Canaanites. Canaanite nations here, all sorts of names. The Ites, I like to call them, the Hivites, Girgasites, the Amorites, Jebusites, Perizzites, just scattered throughout there, the seven nations of Canaan. Canaanites' neighbors, Philistia, down here to the south or along the Gaza Strip, Edom also south of the Dead Sea, then you've got the Ammonites, the Aram over here to the east, northeast, and then Phoenicia, the Phoenicians up there in the Lebanese area of Tyre and Sidon. Focusing on Palestine, Israel during the patriarchal periods, continuing with that, the patriarchs of the Jews, you've got Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in those particular parts of Genesis. Abraham, first of all, Genesis 12 through 25, the first Jew. Called by God in Genesis 12, 1 through 3, out of Ur of the Chaldees, southern Iraq, to the land of Canaan, given four promises by God. Let me just read the passage for you. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I'll make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and you all the families of the earth will be blessed. So the four promises then, the land of Canaan to Abraham and his descendants, that Abraham would have physical descendants, that Abraham would be blessed with eternal life to him personally, as well as the fact that the blessing of eternal life would go to those who are associated with him. And just, if you want, you can boil these down really to two promises. The first two going together here, that God promised to Abraham to make of him a great nation and to give them the land of Israel. That would be the Jews, the physical descendants of Abraham. And then 3 and 4, God promised to Abraham eternal life, and anyone who was willing to associate himself with Abraham by having the same kind of belief in Yahweh, in God, and ultimately in Jesus of Nazareth as the Messiah. So you can boil it down to those two promises if you want. Description of the promised land, coming from Genesis 15, 18, on that day the Lord, or Yahweh, made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. River of Egypt, it's contested whether that's the Nile River or what's called the Wadi el-Arish, which is in southern Israel. River Euphrates, kind of hard to dispute exactly what that is. That's a lot of land right there that incorporates a lot more land than what we even see the modern state of Israel have right now. If this, if God is really going to be giving all of this to the Jews eventually. Called by God, given four promises, Abraham was, and he journeyed from Ur to Canaan. Here's a map of that. Starts down in southern Iraq. Down here, you can barely see the beginning of that blue line that goes all the way up. Why didn't he go this way? Just go due west. Desert. That's right. So he followed the Fertile Crescent up northwest, and then continued to follow the Fertile Crescent down south into the land of Canaan. Ended up over in Egypt, then back to the land of Canaan after that. Had two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. Genesis 21, after both of these sons have been born, therefore Sarah said to Abraham, drive out this maid, his maid, and her son Ishmael, because Abraham had Ishmael by Hagar, her handmaid. For the son of this maid should not be an heir with my son Isaac. And the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. But God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, for through Isaac your descendants, your seed, shall be named. So Abraham's two sons, Genesis 16 through 22, Ishmael, as I mentioned, born to Hagar, Sarah's Egyptian maid, but therefore outside the promises of God that God gave to Abraham back in Genesis 12. His descendants are the Arabs, then Isaac, born to Sarah, inside the promises of God according to Genesis, and his descendants are the Jews. But this has become a bone of contention between the Arabs and the Jews as to who actually has the right to the land, because the Arabs claim that since Ishmael was Abraham's first son, that on the basis of what it's called primogeniture, that Ishmael and his descendants really have the right to the land, not Isaac and his sons. And I think they brought suit before even the United Nations back in the 40s to that effect, the Palestinian Arabs did. But God is saying, that's why that passage beforehand there, Genesis 21, it's Isaac and his descendants who shall be descendants of that promise. Isaac's two sons in Genesis 25 through 27, you've got Esau, declared by God not to be one who would inherit the promises of Abraham, similar to Ishmael. Descendants are the Edomites. Jacob, declared by God to be the one who would inherit the promises of Abraham. His descendants are the 12 tribes of Israel, the Jews. And God changed his name to Yisrael, which means he who struggles with God when Jacob struggled with the angel of God before he was coming back from Aram. Jacob's Israel's 12 sons, Genesis 28 through 50, they are the 12 tribes of Israel. Joseph, I just highlight because he was the youngest son, sold into slavery, taken down to Egypt, became vice pharaoh of Egypt. His father Jacob and his brothers moved to Egypt during a famine, and the Israelites spent 400 years there from approximately 1800 to 1400 BC. Now onto the third division of history, the Egyptian sojourn, 1800 to 1400. Haven't gotten outside of the Mesopotamia, Egyptian, Anatolian immediate neighbors circle of influence. Mesopotamia, we now move into, we've got now the old Babylonian Empire, 1780 to 1400 BC, during which the Code of Hammurabi was, that you can see in the Louvre Museum in Paris, one of the earliest sets of laws. Anatolia, the Hittites, Egypt, the intermediate dynasties, and the New Kingdom. Focusing on Palestine during this time, inhabited by the Canaanites, all these ites, Kenites, Kenizzites, etc. The Phoenicians, are they Semitic peoples? Hard to know. A lot of dispute about that. Their name means purple because they sold a purple dye. They inhabited the coastal cities of Lebanon and Syria, north of Israel, Tyre, Sidon, Byblos, and Beirut. Planted trading colonies as far as Carthage. Then the Philistines in the southern portion of Israel, Hamites according to Genesis 10:14, these were the sea peoples who came from northern Greece, which is interesting. If they are Hamites, they must have migrated north first from that kind of Hamitic area of Canaan, Egypt, to Greece, and then come back to the area of Palestine, Israel, around 1500 B.C. So this just shows you a map of the migration of the Philistines from Greece, where they just spread out, and they ended up also down here. This would be the area of the Philistines the Israelites ended up having to contend with quite a bit. Fourth division of history, Exodus and the settlement of the land. Haven't gotten outside of that circle of influence. So Egypt, first of all, Pharaoh released the Israelites from slavery under the leadership of Moses. The immediate neighbors during their journey from Egypt to Canaan, battles fought with the Amalekites and others. And then immediate neighbors after settlement of the land, they had the Philistines, the Moabites, the Canaanites, the Midianites, all sorts of other folks to contend with after they settled. God delivered the Israelites, and you can read about this obviously in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. After a 400-year sojourn in Egypt, they had been enslaved by Pharaoh because they were becoming too numerous. Moses led them out of Egypt back towards the land of Israel, which God had promised to Abraham in Genesis 12. God met the Israelites at Mount Sinai and gave them the Mosaic Covenant, and they wandered for 40 years because of their initial refusal to trust God. I won't read through all of it. Well, this may be the... Let's see. What is that? Well, what do I want to read here? Maybe what's worth reading is this 37 and 38, because God loved your fathers, that would be Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, therefore he chose their descendants after them. That was his promise to Abraham. And to drive out before you the nations greater and mightier than you. They're in the land of Canaan because he had promised them the land of Canaan. And then his imperative to them in verses 39 and 40, let's look at 40. So you shall keep, guard, observe, hold dear his statutes and his commandments, which I am giving you today, which end up being the 613 commandments of the Mosaic Covenant that include the Ten Commandments. The Exodus and Wilderness Journey, a map of that. So starting off in Egypt over here, I think these lines are intended to be kind of alternative theory of routes for the Israelites. The traditional route is to going all the way down here to Mount Sinai and then north up towards Israel, wandering around Mount Sinai, the Sinai Desert for 40 years, and then eventually going over to the eastern side of the Jordan River and crossing into the land of Israel. Palestine, Israel during the Exodus and settlement of the land, you can read about this in Joshua, Judges, Ruth, and 1 Samuel 1 through 7. The land was inhabited by the Canaanites. Joshua and the Israelites conquered the land. Each tribe except the Levites received a portion of the land. Why did the Levites not receive a portion of the land? They were the priests. Their portion was God. And then they were supported by the other tribes. Judges led the Israelites during cycles of oppression from neighboring peoples. And Samuel was the last judge when the Israelites demanded a king in the first part of 1 Samuel. A map of the tribes of Israel. Manasseh being one of the sons of Joseph. a half tribe, so to speak. There's a tremendous amount of land there, and you can look through that as you want. Probably, maybe like a key thing here, just to point out, might as well do this now. Judah in the south, and then most of the others, except for what we got, Simeon, and then Benjamin, just bordering on the north there, mostly in the north. Why does that become important later on in Israel's history? The fact that Judah's in the south, right near, and there's Bethlehem and Jerusalem right here, and then the rest of them up north. Because of the division during the monarchy. Yeah, exactly. And Judah remained it to itself ruled over Jerusalem. Fifth division of history, monarchy and exiles, 1050 to 539 BC. That circle's still the same. Mesopotamia, you've got the new Assyrian Empire now from 900 to 609 BC. The new Babylonian Empire from 630 to 539 BC. And Egypt and the nations surrounding the land. The new Assyrian Empire, capital at Nineveh in northern Iraq, conquered the northern kingdom of Israel and took 10 tribes into exile in 722, around 700 BC, let's say. So here's the Assyrian Empire, showing you there, and got campaigns of various kings and the multicolored lines that you see there. So pretty extensive empire. What do we see here, though? What is it following mainly? What do we call that? The Fertile Crescent. Very good. All the way down, even into having conquered Egypt. New Babylonian Empire from 609 to 539 BC. Massive building in the city of Babylon. Hanging Gardens of Babylon, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. They conquered the Assyrians in 609 BC at the Battle of
Carchemish.
Good. Conquered the southern kingdom. That's pop quizzes for those of you on, Wednesday nights, right? Conquered the southern kingdom of Judah, destroyed the temple in Jerusalem, and took the Jews into exile in 586, or basically completing that. That started before a few years before that, but the whole thing was pretty well wrapped up by 586 BC. So here we have the Babylonian Empire. Gee, what a surprise. Pretty much follows the outlines of the Assyrian Empire and the Fertile Crescent. And then this red line is intended to demonstrate the deportation of the Jews from Judah over into Babylon, where they set up a community there. And that community plays into the history of Israel and the Jews for a long, long time after that. Nebuchadnezzar's dream in Daniel 2 just shows the different empires that have an effect upon Israel: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, and then Rome after 440 BC with that dream. That's as much as we'll say about that right now. Egypt, King Solomon married Pharaoh's daughter in 1 Kings 3. Just some, next time you're meeting with somebody in Starbucks, you can, do you know what happened in 1 Kings 3? King Hoshea of Israel sought an alliance with So, Pharaoh of Egypt, to resist the Assyrians in 2 Kings 17. Pharaoh Necho killed King Josiah at Megiddo in 2 Kings 23. Just a few facts and figures there. Nations surrounding the land sometimes harassed the Israelites militarily, sometimes influenced the Israelites to worship their gods instead of God exclusively. Focusing on Palestine, Israel, during this monarchical and exilic period of 1 Samuel 8 through 2 Kings 25, you've got the monarchy from 1 Samuel 8 to 1 Kings 11. Monarchy means that there was a king, then a divided monarchy, divided kingdoms, the northern kingdom of Israel, southern kingdom of Judah. We'll look at that. And then the exiles, the first exile, 2 Kings 17, that was produced or caused by the first exile, by the first exile?
Babylonians.
Try again?
Assyrians.
Assyrians. Okay, good. By the Assyrians. Second exile, by the
Babylonians.
Okay, good. Now, how can you remember that? What's a good mnemonic?
A-B.
There you go. Assyrians the first, and then the Babylonians second. Very good. The monarchy. Israelites demanded a king in 1 Samuel 8. Effectively ended the time of the judges and three kings before the monarchy became divided. The first three kings of Israel, Saul, ruled from 1020 to 1004 B.C. You can read about that in 1 Samuel 8 through 31. Then David, 1004 to 965. He killed Goliath, the Philistine champion, enlarged the kingdom from the Red Sea to the Euphrates River, established Jerusalem as the capital, and they just celebrated the 3,000th anniversary in 2000. Solomon from 965 to 930 became the wisest man of his day and built the first temple in Jerusalem. Here is David's and Solomon's kingdom. You can see that they did extend basically their kingdom as far up as what the land was described by in that passage in Genesis 15, all the way up to here, the Euphrates River. And down, this would be, I guess this really is approximately the area that Sayyad does. The Wadi El Arish, as I mentioned to you, instead of the Nile River over here, that the southern border was the Wadi El Arish. Wadi meaning just kind of creek, and it flows only when during the rainy period. And you've got the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea right there. So David and Solomon's kingdom. The Davidic covenant. I'll just read kind of the, let's go down, drop down here. When your days are complete, God says to David, and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your descendant after you, who will come forth from you, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be a father to him. He will be a son to me. When he commits iniquity, I will correct him with the rod of men and the strokes of the sons of men. And my loving kindness shall not depart from him, as I took it from Saul, whom I removed from before you. Your house and your kingdom shall endure before me forever. Your throne shall be established forever. This covenant figures prominently, obviously, into our understanding of the New Testament and Jesus as the final Davidic king who rules over the eternal kingdom of God. But before that, every descendant or every descendant of David who sat on the throne of Israel, Judah, was basically God's son. Also, he could call God his father. He was the Messiah, small m maybe, versus capital M, which Jesus is, the Messiah with a capital M. But the Davidic covenant, the basis of the Jewish and Christian, for that matter, messianic expectations. I guess I basically said all this. God will place the people of Israel in the land of he promised to Abraham, and there they will live securely, free of oppression and harassment. And one of David's descendants, the Messiah, the anointed one, that's what the word Messiah means, will rule over the people of Israel and bring peace to the world. You've got the divided monarchy, though. After Solomon, his son, and I, this one's always a tough one. Not that I have to remember it, but it's try to. Who was it? Jeroboam was the son, right? And Rehoboam was the servant. Do I have that right? Well, one or the other. I get mixed up. You have the northern kingdom of Israel, where there were 20 kings. Eventually, it was destroyed and taken into captivity by Assyria in 722 BC. And then the southern kingdom of Judah, also 20 kings. It destroyed and taken into captivity by Babylon in 586 BC. These are a map of the two kingdoms. So you've got the northern kingdom here of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. Jerusalem, where is Jerusalem? There's Bethlehem. There's Jerusalem right there in that area. So Jerusalem and Bethlehem, Jerusalem itself, always remained within the southern kingdom of Judah. Two exiles, we've talked about these, Assyrian, 722, Babylonian. Assyrian exile, you read about that in 2 Kings 17, involved only the northern kingdom of Israel. So, where am I? This area here, northern kingdom of Israel. 10 lost tribes of Israel who later went on to make up the bulk of the Ashkenazi and the Sephardic Jews in Russia and Europe. How do you remember which is which? Are the Sephardic, the European? Well, actually, let me put it this way. Which is the most Western of the Jews, the Sephardic or the Ashkenazi?
Sephardic.
And how can you remember that?
Spain.
S in Spain. Very good. Okay. Did not return until recently, except in relatively small amounts. These Jews did not lost the knowledge of their tribal affiliations, known also as the Jewish diaspora, kind of the first Jewish diaspora dispersion of the Jews. There were several. This was the first one. Babylonian exile. Involved only the southern kingdom of Judah. Two tribes of Judah and Benjamin. I don't know why I don't have the Simeonites in here, because they're on the map, but maybe they're the ones that are mainly mentioned in the biblical text. Did return 70 or so years later. Also lost the knowledge of their tribal affiliations, known also as the Jewish diaspora. Babylonians replaced the Jews with Samaritans, peoples of mixed races. They did? Or the Assyrians? Okay, help me out here. Students of David, was it the Assyrians? Okay, well, Okay, homework for you. Look that up. Check me out on that. Was it the maybe it really was the the Samaritans that, were they placed there by the by the Babylonians, not by the Assyrians? No,
The Assyrians.
It was the Assyrians. Okay, so the Assyrians. You can change that. Jesus' conversion with a Samaritan woman you can read about in John 4. The New Covenant. Just mention this because of its importance for the land of Israel as well as for Christians and the fulfillment of God's promises to the Jews that he will make even of them the great nation. You notice that the New Covenant in Jeremiah 31, it is addressed to the Jews. Verse 31. Behold, days are coming, declares Yahweh, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. So with the Jews themselves, not like the covenant which I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt. My covenant which they broke, although I was a husband to them, declares the Lord. But this is the covenant which I will make with the house of Israel after those days. I will put my Torah within them, and on their heart I will write it, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. They will not teach again each man his neighbor and each man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, declares Yahweh, for I will forgive their iniquity and their sin I will remember no more. So it will be God's fulfillment of the new covenant that will constitute the fulfillment of his promise to Abraham back in Genesis 12 that he will make of him and his physical descendants a great nation. Still to come, I believe, in the future. Return in pre-Roman period, 539 to 60 B.C., now we can add Persia and Greece to the ever-widening circle of influence. The Persians, the Persian Empire from 559 to 330. The Persians conquered the Babylonians in 539 BC. Capital of Susa in southern Iran, east of Iraq across the Zagros Mountains. Persian Empire, important rulers mentioned in the Bible. You've got Cyrus, permitted the Israelites to return to the land of Israel from Babylon. You've got Darius, depending upon how you want to pronounce it, verified in 520 BC that the Israelites had the right to rebuild the temple. Their religion is Zoroastrianism. Monotheists, they worship Ahura Mazda. Anybody drive a Mazda? This is where that name came from. We get our word paradise that even Jesus himself said on the cross from Zoroastrianism, the influence from them. Persian Empire lasted until 330 BC when Alexander the Great defeated Darius III at the Battle of Issus up kind of northwestern Syria, southern Turkey, approximately the Taurus Mountains. Approximately 200 years of Persian influence on the Jews who returned from Babylon around 538 BC. The Persian Empire, pretty big. Fairly large, extending all the way here, over here's the Indus Valley. So this would be Pakistan right here, India there. This would be Afghanistan here, and then Iran, this area. So all the way up into what would be probably a whole bunch of other Anistans in the southern Russian area, Turkey, Egypt there. So an extensive empire that the Persians ruled over. Greece, Alexander the Great, ruled from 336 to 323, defeated Persia at the Battle of Issus in southern Turkey, soon afterwards conquered the land of Israel, died in Babylon in 323, 1 month shy of his 33rd birthday, major Hellenic influence throughout his empire. The Hebrew scriptures were translated into Greek, the Greek language, around 170 BC because of so many Greek-speaking Jews, and the New Testament was written in Greek by Christians who were mostly Jewish. Here's Alec. Yes.
Is that the Septuagint?
Yes, and that is called the Septuagint. LXX, Septua, because it is, by tradition, there were 70 Jewish scholars who translated the Hebrew scriptures into Greek. Alexander's empire, pretty much the Assyrian empire, plus a little bit more, because what he had, obviously, was Greece and Macedonia over here, but extending again all the way over into the Indus Valley in Pakistan, India there, etc. Boy, he traveled a lot. Look at that route. My goodness. These lines here, in how many years? Not too long. Maybe about 20 in that time. Dude covered a lot of ground. Syria and Egypt. After Alexander's death in 323 BC, his empire was divided amongst four generals. I'm going to pronounce it Seleucus, took Mesopotamia and Iran, setting up the Seleucid Empire that included Syria Then Ptolemy took Egypt, setting up the Ptolemaic Empire that included the land of Israel. The Seleucids and the Ptolemies periodically fought over the land of Israel for almost 200 years. Gee, why would you think they would fight over the land of Israel? Important trade route, that bridge between Asia and Africa. Alexander's divided kingdom, the green there, the Seleucid Empire. So that general got the bulk of it. Brownish Macedonia over here, Antigonid Empire, the Ptolemaic Empire down here in Egypt, and then the Hellenistic province, very small right there, that fourth general got. So what do you have? Cassander, Lysimachus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy up here, the four generals. Focusing on Palestine, Israel, during the return and pre-Roman period, return from Babylonian captivity, you can read about in Ezra and Nehemiah, the pre-Hasmonean leadership and the Hasmonean leadership. Return from Babylonian captivity. Persia conquered Babylon in 539 BC. The exiles began returning to Jerusalem under King Cyrus. Temple rebuilt and completed in 516. Walls of Jerusalem rebuilt under the leadership of Nehemiah, and many Jews remained. But many Jews remained in Babylon, and that becomes important for their history, even their kind of scholarly literary history later on because of the Talmud. Pre-Hasmonean leadership, 500 of 142 BC. Bunch of facts here that you just would love to cram into your head. The Hasmoneans were a family who became influential in Israel during the 2nd century BC, as recorded in 1st and 2nd Maccabees. The Jews were ruled by Persia from 539 to 333, then conquered by Alexander the Great around 333, then oppressed under the rule of both the Ptolemies and the Seleucids as they fought over that land, the land bridge of Israel. They finally revolted in 165 BC under the leadership of Judas Maccabeus, the Hammer, against the Seleucids who had desecrated the temple. And their victory is commemorated by the festival of Hanukkah, celebrating the miracle that a day's portion of oil in the menorah lasted for 8 days, allowing for the cleansing and rededication of the temple. Hasmonean leadership, 142 to 40. The Hasmonean kingdom was established by the Jews to the effect that the king would also be the high priest. In spite of assassinations and conspiracies, the kingdom survived for 100 years or so. Here is just a map of the Hasmonean kingdom there. Dead Sea, Sea of Galilee, Jordan River. So bleeding over here into the Jordan, Syria, area of modern Syria. Golan Heights up there. And this would be the outline, the boundary of modern-day Israel, present-day Israel. On to the seventh division of history, the Roman Byzantine period, 60 BC to AD 630. We'll only cover a portion of this before we take a break. Ever-widening circle of influence, Rome and Constantinople now come into play. The Roman Empire from 60 BC to AD 313 and the Byzantine Empire from AD 313 to 630. Why is it only to AD 313 that you have the Roman Empire and then the Byzantine Empire from that point on? Anybody know? What happened in 313? This is Constantine. Okay, Constantine. What did he do? Can you sing the song for us, Ken? He moved the capital of the empire from Rome to Byzantium and then renamed the city Constantinople. Very good. Okay, great. Good. Just seeing it here. Which is not modern day Istanbul. And who renamed Constantinople Istanbul in 1453? The Turks. Who conquered the Byzantine Empire and Constantinople. Okay, just seeing if you all are awake. Roman Empire. The expansion of the initial Roman city-state into an empire began long before the birth of Christ. The Roman Republic changed the Roman Empire either with the appointment of Julius Caesar as perpetual dictator in 44 BC or with Octavian becoming Augustus Caesar in 31 BC. And he ruled from 31 to AD 14. It just depends upon the historian that you read as to when the Republic changed to the Empire. So here's the Roman Empire under Augustus Caesar, 31 BC to AD 14, from Britannia. I guess Britannia is still unconquered territory, but certainly France, Spain, and as far as here's Palestine, Israel down here, as well, including northern Africa. Focusing on Palestine, Israel, during the Roman period, we'll just go from 60 BC to the birth of Jesus Christ for the time being. Herod the Great was installed by the Romans as a vassal king over the land of Israel around 74 BC. He was an Idumean, who are descendants of the Edomites and Esau, refurbished the Second Temple. The Roman general Pompey sacked Jerusalem in 61 BC, and the land of Israel came under complete Roman control, and the Hasmonean leadership effectively ended in 40 BC. The Romans called the land around Jerusalem Judea, which is the word used 46 times in the New Testament. Palestine during the time of Jesus. What do we have here? All sorts of words, places, Judea here, Galilee, the northern portion because of the Sea of Galilee, Phoenicia, Tyre up in that area, the Decapolis, meaning 10 cities over here, which I believe that's mentioned in the New Testament, Perea, Trachonitis, Etruria, Abilene, not Texas, but in the Middle East there. So just a nice map that you can look at some more at your leisure. And now we'll take a break, okay? Because we'll go on to the part two after this.